excision number 11938, reel 3.
Mr. G. Eyston, reel 3. You went to Kingham, Mr. Eyston. What were the conditions under which you were living in Kingham?
We were living in a stable, probably a racing stable, because they had a big riding school, covered riding school, where we just were training in the extreme bad weather that we had that particular time of the year. In fact, it was a fight as to who was going to be lost in the bucket of water we collected for, rather than the first, because it got warmer as everybody got washed and went on. I don't think I've experienced such bad weather. Well, maybe 1947, but apart from that, it's probably the worst winter I've spent.
How did you keep warm?
Went to the pub, and we were drinking mulled ale, mulled cider. And I well remember one night the boys got rather too much cider, and in one spot there was an old granary with the old granary steps without any rails. And two of these lads, three of the lads, they walked up the granary step and walked straight over the top, fell to the bottom and broke two ankles. That was the result of mulled cider. But it was the only way it would keep warm. The people, as I said, when we first went to Kingham, weren't very happy with us. But they did create a great canteen before we left. And it was run by the vicar's wife, who'd condemned us before we got there.
So what, we had, in what ways had she condemned you?
Well, he stood in his pulpit before we arrived and said that the women had got beware because the wild men from the north were coming down and they better protect their daughters. By the time we left, they were crying because we were leaving, but that's happening in most places. So the people did all they could for us before we did leave. And as I said, the only real place was beside the big fires in the pubs with the mulled cider.
What kind of activities were you actually doing in Kingham? Were you training?
We were mainly platoon training, some company training, but not beyond that. I think possibly there's one battalion exercise, because there was a spot not far from Kingham where you could stand on one foot and swing your other foot through three counties. It always intrigued me, this spot. I can't say just where it is now, but it was on top of a hill, and you could see five counties, in fact. Then, probably it's all changed now, but then there was five counties around. So that was the only real battalion exercise that I can remember, and that was my first introduction to Colonel Jeffries, because I had to take some messages to him, Major Jeffries. He was then second in command of the battalion, and that was sort of my first meeting with him. Because I got told off for saluting, and the last thing you do is salute an officer in the field. Obviously, because the enemy sees you saluting him. So that was my first introduction. He told me off for saluting him in the field.
What were your particular duties at this time?
I was company runner at that particular stage. So I was running from the company headquarters to battalion headquarters, or battalion A echelon headquarters, which was the sort of the battle headquarters of the battalion.
And was there any kind of training in this particular thing, or did you just got the job? It was
training, because you had to keep out of sight. It wasn't a run, it's called company runner. You ran where you could. But a lot of the time, as a runner, you've got to crawl down the ditch behind the hedge so that you're not seen. Because if you're seen, I mean, any movement, that's all the enemy can see. They can't see you when you're still. But if any movement, that's when the enemy sees you.
So you'd have training in use of ground?
Yes, ground cover. About the time, towards the end of our stay in Kingham, we lost quite a lot of people who went back to the 10th Battalion. We supplied some for the 10th Battalion from Barnet Castle. And then they had another sort out towards the end of our stay at Kingham. And a lot more people went back to the 10th Battalion. Some went to divisional appointments. But anyway, we were quite depleted towards the end of the stage, and we had a draft of recruits, well, a draft of people from the depot at Durham, and mainly from the 2nd Battalion. One in particular was a Corporal Dawson, Titchy Dawson, from the time. His favourite expression was, "Come on, yous guys." Yous guys, I'd never heard it before, but he wasn't really a Geordie, but he was strange to us. And he came back with the intention that he was going to teach the TA what a battalion should be run like, what a company should be run like. So he sort of upset everybody for a start, but eventually we got him sorted out. But in the same draft, there was two lads, Lester and Chester. I can't remember their names, but they were known as Lester and Chester. And they were going to take the TA for a ride. They were going to have a good time out the TA there. And they tried it very hard as well. The colour sergeant, Quartermaster Sergeant Barnes, when he got excited, he used to stutter. So the lads came in one night and well oiled. They set about Quartermaster Sergeant Barnes and what they were going to do with him and all the rest of it. And I can remember quite plainly, and put you on a charge. And that was the first charge we had. This was almost 3 months. That was the first charge we had in the company, in B Company. And he put them on the charge. And I think the Sergeant Major Fox was quite happy because at last he had somebody to do his cookhouse fatigues before he had to detail somebody. But now he had confined the barracks people who he could use for his cookhouse fatigues.
And what form did this take? What did it exactly mean, being put on a charge?
Well, the army system was, and is as far as I'm aware, that if somebody committed an offence in military law or even regimental law, and there's quite a lot of regimental law, they were put on a charge sheet, which is 252, AF 252, and the person making the charge sheet out put the charge sheet through to the company office, and eventually they were paraded in front of the company commander. And the person making the charge would give evidence, and the people who were being charged would give their reply. And then the company commander would give his verdict and the sentence. And I think these two, they were sentenced to 7 days confined to barracks, which meant that they had to parade an hour after the parade's finished, after a normal parade's finished. They paraded an hour later, and they were given fatigues to do, which was, as I said, in most cases, in this particular case, was the cookhouse. Because up till then, it had to detail somebody without any records. And not a very happy situation. It's an army rule that you always have plenty of defaulters to do the cookhouse cleaning. So that was the 2nd Battalion draft. Now, about this time, and I still don't really know why, but I finished up as the officer's mess cook. I suppose it was really in preparation for the fact that we were going to be on the rear party when the battalion went to France, because Captain Ferrans, Michael Ferrans, he had a brother who was the adjutant, Vernon. He was by this time company commander. Again, how he came to be company commander, I have no idea. I just don't know. But anyway, at this time, he was the company commander, and he was staying in charge of the rear party when the rest went off. And I finished up as the officer's mess cook. And one of my great worries at the time was that he wanted to entertain the ladies, the officers' ladies, to a dinner before they left. So I had the job of preparing the dinner, and it went very well.
Can you remember the meal?
I can't. No, I can't. I know it was roast beef was the main thing, but I did a soup, and I'd done some training with my mother. She was a good cook, and I'd done some training with her. Being an only boy, an only child for 10 years, you see, I spent a lot of time helping mother, as you might say, keep me quiet. So I'd had a fair amount of cooking training before I even went to the army. But we had a good, they had a good meal, and the ladies came through and congratulated me, and it went off very well at the end of the time. And just before we left, we got a draft from the Shropshire Light Infantry, a big draft, because, as I said, a lot of people had left. And this puzzled us for a little while, and then we realised, in fact we were told, that with 151 Brigade being wiped out twice in the First World War, that period left Durham County in a sorry, sad state, as you might say, because they'd lost, you know, only lost about 3,000 men in a county the size of Durham. It's a big loss. And it was explained to us that the Shropshires were coming in, so this was lessened. There'd be people from all over the county. If it was another situation like the First World War, we would have people from different parts of the country. Instead of all being from one county. And these Shropshire lads were like ourselves. They were rural rather than urban. So they were, yes, they mixed in very well, except for the speech.
Do you have any recall of men from the county who were sent back into the pits because of their particular skills?
Well, this was one of the things that did happen, but not a lot. I don't think a lot left to go back to the pits. But that was part of the problem. And there were all sorts of reserved operations crept in before we went to France. I mean, they found shortages in all sorts of industries and veterinary surgeons and things like this. There were shortages in the country, and they rectified it as far as they could by taking people back from the army, which left us short by the end of our stay, before we went to France. And that's why we had the two fairly big drafts in.
Did you go to France from Kingham, or where did you go next?
No. when the battalion went off to France, well, before the battalion went to France, Tommy Russ, myself, about five of us from B Company, went with Major Ferns to form this rear party to clear up the battalion pooled vehicles, and we drew pooled vehicles for ourselves for use while we were on the rear party.
How did that work? What is a pool vehicle?
A pool is a... It can happen in all sorts of things. It can be vehicles, tables, cooking utensils, and all this sort of thing. It's a depot which has a stock of vehicles, cooking utensils, and you go to this, and it's called the pool. You draw a selection of vehicles from the pool for use in a particular circumstance. It happens now with the TA camps, because we're not fully equipped with camps, with their vehicles or guns. So you go to the pool and you draw the equivalent of a battalion's stock, as you might say, of vehicles, cook utensils, telephones, wirelesses, anything. It's called pool. You and go to the pool and you draw it.
When you finish with them, it goes
back. It goes back to the pool. Because our own vehicles had gone to France, you see. They went off to France fairly early, before the battalion went. So we used pool vehicles for the battalion while they were still waiting to go. And then they had to be returned to the pool, and we'd had vehicles to carry on. I had a Humber staff car. And the Humber staff car was built for work in India with a big radiator. And this extreme cold, the radiator froze up while we were travelling. It was, you used to leave a car running and you'd expect it to stay free of frost. It was to drain out every night and fill up every morning, but this used to freeze up while we were travelling. And one of my first duties was to collect the Brigadier, Jack Churchill, from a village called Churchill, about 5 miles from Chipping Norton, which was the battalion headquarters then. But he was in the village, and I think the brigade headquarters was actually in this village when it was there. Of course, it was just the rear party left at this time, and had to pick him up from the village, Jack Churchill, from the village of Churchill, and take him into wherever he wanted to go first thing in the morning.
So at this time, within the rear party, you're basically driving?
I was driving at this time. We both were. Tommy was driving, I think he was driving the QM, and I was driving the CO, and the officers, more or less, because by this time we were short of vehicles. So it was a full time. Until the battalion left, I suppose I worked about 18 hours a day, just enough time to get a sleep in. Because the battalion were visiting, were busy visiting various people that they wanted to see before we left the area. So it was a busy time. And, of course, I didn't meet Peter Jeffries then because he was already in France with the advance party. So I was driving Colonel Miller because his driver had gone to France. And we were, after the battalion left, we were busy closing down the cook house, watermaster stores, and getting stuff back to the pool. And we were very, very busy. But we did take one night off. We borrowed the CO's car and I drove it. And we went to the 8th Battalion dance because they didn't leave until after our battalion had gone. We had a good time. We were really enjoying it. And I won the cake and waffle. I immediately go up and collect the cake and said, a gentleman from the 6th Battalion. So then we had to put our skates on and get get away sharp before anybody discovered the CO's car outside. but that was about about 3 nights, actually. And then when we got finally cleaned up and everything returned to the pool, I can't remember if we went to Burford or Bulford. I think it was probably Bulford. Could have been Burton on the Water or Burford. I think it was probably Burford. And then we spent the night in Burford, where we joined up with some RAF volunteer reserves. Funny enough, from Thornaby, just down the road from Dedham. And that turned into a very, very heavy night. And the following day, we all went to Southampton, and we got on the ferry, having a bad head and one thing or another. And we stayed on the deck most of the trip until we landed in Cherbourg. When we got to Cherbourg, it was absolutely pouring down. We got off the ferry in the midst of miles of railway tracks. And the first thing we saw was a red lamp. We'd heard the red lamp when they, what it stood for, but we just stood waiting for the train to board the train to go to Fresnes-sur-Sarthe. The train, seeing it, I can't just remember it now, but I think it said 40 home or 8 chauffeur, 40 men or 8 horses, which was a standing up affair, and we just climbed on board and finally finished up in Fresnes.
Who were the first French people that you actually saw when you landed?
Well, there was people around in Cherbourg, but we didn't actually get to see them. My first real impression of French people was seeing the women in the snow doing the washing in the river. Now, I'd heard of this in African countries, but I didn't think it ever happened in France. And the ladies were down there washing their clothes with on a stone in the river. It was snowing all over the place. And that was my first real impression of France. When I got to Fresnes, I got quite a shock because I was told I wasn't going back to B Company. And I was going to be the driver batman to Major Jeffries. I wasn't happy about that for a while. But eventually we got to know each other and we got on quite well.
Did you know of Major Jeffrey's reputation before this?
No. As I explained, I'd only met him the once on the battalion exercise. And I suppose we were rather remote. We're a town company, B Company was a town company, and for all we'd had a couple of drafts, we were still a very close-knit company, and we didn't bother very much with the rest of the battalion. And with me not being in the TA beforehand, I had no idea, really, of battalion, what the battalion was, until I went to Chipping Norton, and then it started to drift into me then, because I had to take the CO around all the companies, and I got to know where the various companies and things were at this stage. And I was pretty good at finding the directions, so I didn't have a lot of problem. But it was strange, quite strange, going to headquarter company to be his batman, you see, driver
what
batman.
What are the duties of a driver batman?
Well, in my case, it was a 800-weight PU Morris truck, and it was his personal vehicle. I had to look after it and drive it and do his messages. The batman side, he was really very good. I mean, yes, I took after his clothes. See that he got fed, which wasn't always easy, because very often we were miles away from anywhere, and I very often used to dip into the shop and buy a cold sausage or something like this just to keep us going. Because among his other duties, as second in command, he was a training officer, the main training officer. And he was, in the case of a battle, he was the advanced battalion. He was the man in charge of the attack, as you might say. But also amongst his things, he was the president of PRO. President of the Regimental Fund, Regimental Organisation, which meant that he had the NAFI and everything like that to see to. Now then, just touch on that one briefly, because as NAFI, if I hadn't had to go to the NAFI to collect supplies, I wouldn't have known there was a NAFI. There was no NAFI in the villages or anything like that. When we were where we were billeted, there was no NAFI. It was all done by the PRO, which was roughly the Padre and the second command. So there wasn't much time to spare at all. We billeted in the, I think it was Franey, where we billeted in the brewery. Well, it might have been the prison. I can't remember, because I remember seeing the guillotine in the prison yard at Franey. Now, how I should see that, unless we billeted there, I can't remember. But it was either Franey or Molin Vidam. We were in the brewery, and I explained that the Shropshire lads, they were rural people like ourselves, and one had been a gamekeeper. And every night, these rafters were running with rats. Oh, they were dropping off the rafters onto the beds and scarpering away. And this lad got so sick with his rifle and shot the rat, and it fell down. Unfortunately, the rifle bullet went through the roof, so the rain came in as well. It wasn't his shotgun he was using, it was a rifle bullet, and that went straight through the roof. So quite a commotion about that, who was shooting the rats. But it was really nerve-wracking to have these things running over your head all the time and then dropping off every now and again to see if you could find anything.
What else can you tell me about the accommodation you were living under and the conditions you were living under at Franey?
Well, Franey, you see, we hit this hard winter, and it got down as far as Franey in France. Really hard. The main meal, I suppose, was in the cafe for Gerf Pommes Air Frites, egg and chips. I suppose we probably had about three or four of those a night. It was mainly somewhere to go to keep warm rather than than eating. It was mainly somewhere to keep warm. And the people again in France, they were very nice to us in that part anyway. In fact, we had no trouble with the French people at all. The only trouble I've ever had with the French people was when I went back again to Chartres, and they were really abominable. I don't know why that particular place, because the rest of France when I was back, they were all quite nice, but Chartres over there, we didn't like the British at all. I don't know who'd upset them. But they were very good to us, as far as they could do. There was a language problem, but there's a language problem anywhere, isn't there?
What about the army food you were getting at this time? Was it? It
was quite adequate, yes. And we used to supplement it with naffy stuff. And see, the PRO, he had a fund, and he could always augment, to a small extent, he could augment the army rations. For instance, if, we'll say, eggs were in short supply, he had so much money he could go and, I don't mean so much money, he had a lot of money, but he had some money he could use to go and buy eggs or anything else.
And these would be distributed fish, to the battalion?
Yes, through the quartermasters. The quartermaster would say that he was short of eggs and could he get some eggs. And very often he would send me away to see what I could find. It might be milk or fish. I don't remember very much fish. And I think on one occasion I did have to go to the coast to buy fish. But I can't remember just where I went. But fish seemed to be a bit of a problem as far as the army rations were concerned. And I think there was a bit of a scare at one stage. They wanted fish for some particular reason. And I had to go up and buy this fish.
What about hygiene and latrine, that kind of thing?
No baths. French toilets are 2 footmarks in concrete with a hole in the middle. And you've got to do the best you can with that. But it could have been Morin-Verdam, or it could have been Emeryn, I can't just remember, where we were visited by the field cleansing unit, where you picked your blankets and your bed up and all your clothing, and you went down to this cleansing unit, which was, in this case, was about 6 miles away, because I suppose it was doing the brigade. And we marched these 6 miles carrying the blankets and all our clothing. And you handed everything in as you entered. You went in and showered. And they came and had looked through your hair and all the rest of it and see what else they could see, because you were bare at this time. And you came out the other end and dried, and you were given a shirt. I don't think it was very often your own shirt you got back, but it was a shirt and the rest of the things that went with you. So that anybody who was using their own underwear was really, they'd had it, because they just didn't get it back. Somebody else probably got that, or probably the orderlies on the washing unit got it. And you got 2 blankets at the end of the day. And I think that's the only time that I've actually come across the cleansing unit.
Did you suffer from lice?
No. And I can't say that anybody did. No, I can't remember any problems with lice at all. Not at that stage, anyway. Later on, when I was in Tripoli, we had bed bugs in the hospital. Oh, there's a story to come later on about fleas, yes. But that's when we're in there, on the desert.
And what about the leisure activities in France before the war actually broke out for you?
Well, I didn't have much time. Because Major Jeffries were building these... I'm skipping a bit here. I'm going into the Emeryn place now, where we were building the defences for the north of France, because the Maginot Line went up France, between France and Germany, or France and Lorraine and Alsace, and then up to the Belgian border. But at the Belgian border, it stopped. There was nothing. what France was going to do, I just don't know. But we went in and we dug defences from the Belgian border, right along the Belgian border, on the French side of the border, right along to the coast. And had we stayed there, we'd have taken some shifting. So this was going on permanently, and we were starting the divisional exercises then. The move from Fresnes to Tourouve, which was the second stop in France, that was the start of our motorised division work. And that was done purely as an exercise, the move.
Could I just come in there, Mr. Dyson? Because I'd understood that the division was motorised in England, but you're saying in effect that you really go down to a motorised divisional training when you got to France.
Yes.
There was very little in England at all.
Probably because we didn't have the time. By the time the RSC got there, cells mobilised and the vehicles and one thing and another, there probably wasn't the time. They were there, and I believe they did come out on the battalion exercise. Some of them came out.